So, how is life treating you down in London land?
It's treating me okay. It's I've got a slightly quick apology to start with. I may have to duck out of this halfway through the morning for the simple reason that the young woman, design associate at the interior design company that I do bits for, is leaving, and I've got one job, little job outstanding. Got a video out about that today, actually. And she's leaving today, so I got an email from her the other day just to chase up. This is the young woman who's sent me the wrong sets of plans before, and you know, all kinds of
changes to legs and leg design and all that sort of thing. Yeah, yeah.
Changes to legs and all that sort of stuff. Yeah. And she's my project artist. She's ever so nice and all that, but you know, there's no question that she steered me in the wrong direction many times. Anyway, she's leaving, going off to pastures new. Good for her. And I've got this one little job outstanding. So I said, I gave her shot her a quick email yesterday. Job's all done, ready to collect from any time today, from 11 o'clock Thursday, any time this afternoon, any time tomorrow afternoon, any time next week, but tomorrow morning, Friday morning, between 9 and 12, probably not a great time. So I can almost guarantee that halfway through the morning I'll get a text from her to say, oh, the courier's outside and he can't get in. You know, it's like, oh.
Yes. You said between 9 and 12 on Friday morning would be best.
That's right. Just trolling me at this point, I think. It really is.
Bleak. Yeah, we are in the autumn northeast weather now, where we're getting up and it's still pitch black, and I don't know if it's quite got to that point down there yet. Or...
Well, the days are definitely taking time to start at the moment, and it's very dark early on. Of course, we haven't changed the clocks yet, but today is an absolutely glorious day. I'm just leaning away to look out my window. It's absolutely spanking out there, clear blue skies and bright sunshine. It really is fabulous. Which makes a change, because it didn't stop raining yesterday.
Well, I think we've got that here today. I kind of opened all the curtains and then just shut them all again. It was like, oh, it's dark and rainy, and it doesn't look like it's ever going to not be dark and rainy. It's autumn is well and truly setting in, I think. But
it is indeed. And on that happy note, shall we start?
Let's make a start.
Okay, and welcome back to the Measuring Up Podcast, the UK's first and quite possibly favourite commercial weekly joinery podcast. We'll come back to that in a minute. I'm Peter Millard, and as well as running a virtual 10-minute workshop for YouTube, I also run a small but far from perfectly formed carpentering and cabinet making business in the no man's land of West London.
And I'm Andy McClellan, and I run the Gough with Andy Mann channel on YouTube, along with a bunch of other YouTube channels that I seem to be collecting at the minute. And every couple of weeks we get together and chat about all sorts of things to do with making stuff and woodworking and running a one-man business and a bit of YouTube. We're going to try not to talk about too much inside baseball YouTube stuff this time, but we do tend, last time I think was very YouTube heavy.
It was a little bit intense on the YouTube side. We hadn't spoken for a while, and... we needed to vent a little bit, didn't we?
Well, we always need to vent a bit. And we haven't told people that we were away at the XYZ Summit as well. We got to meet again.
We got to meet again, yeah. I think twice a year is enough, probably, isn't it? But no, it was great. Great to meet you. Great to see you. And great to meet everybody else there as well. It was a really good summit. It was really nice to put faces to names. We know what they look like because we've seen them on YouTube. People we know of but had never actually met. People I saw but never got to meet quite at Maker Central last year. This year, wasn't it? Oh, God. It was a really, really, really good event, and very thought-provoking. Very, very interesting.
It was. And, I mean, again, this is very inside baseball because literally only YouTube people were invited to this. It was like... It wasn't a public event. It was like learn more about YouTube and kind of the legal side of things and social media marketing and publishing and copyright law and all this sort of stuff that we need to know about. And in the States, they've had like a thing called Vid Summit for a number of years, I think, that VidSummit's been, and I think it's going on at the minute.
Or VidCon or whichever it is.
Well, there's VidCon, which is kind of the very public, you know, full-on millions and millions of fans go.
Oh, right.
And then there's VidSummit, which I think is more the technical side of things, but still, okay, I think it's still a huge event. And that's...
It's for people who look at YouTube as a business rather than, you know, people doing, you know, glorified selfie videos and all the rest of it. So it was, very, very interesting.
Yeah, so a massive... If anyone who we met there happens to be listening to the podcast, a massive shout-out to everyone, because it was a genuine pleasure to just be able to talk, because I can't talk to my wife about it. Well, I do, but she goes insane with boredom about me talking about the algorithm and affiliate marketing and different types of affiliate links, like how my redirection's working this week and things like that.
Things that are important if you're doing YouTube as a business, but not necessarily particularly interesting to anybody else who isn't.
Honestly, there was so much stuff where it was just like, I can finally talk to someone about this and without them falling asleep, and then they were giving me really good ideas back, and it was... Yeah, it was a really lovely couple of days away, and got to meet some really interesting folk, great channels. And
find some new channels too. Some of the channels that these guys have are big. I'd never heard of them before, and they're big British YouTube channels, and good for them. Something to aim for, something to work towards, I think, getting that sort of viewership and subscriber count and all the rest of it. Subscriber count less important, we're told. But fascinating couple of days. I was only there for the day. I popped up on the Thursday. I had other plans for the Friday morning. So, if there is another one next year, I will definitely be there. I'll clear my diary and attend willingly.
I went for the full shebang and went rock climbing and everything on the Friday afternoon with a couple of YouTubers, and it was amazing. Although I have to say, the last time I was rock climbing was probably about 20 years ago, and I assumed it would be as easy as it was 20 years ago. Well, not easy, but...
Suddenly you find your hands don't grip quite so well and your legs don't push you up the wall quite so well.
I think there's extra gravity going on, I think. I felt so heavy.
Yeah, the atmosphere has definitely changed. It's definitely, more gravity is definitely getting heavier.
Definitely, honestly.
Pulling us back to Earth.
I was on, like, some of the walls, and it's like, oh, well, that looks easy enough. And then I had to get, like, halfway up, and it's like, I feel really heavy. And when you're, like, dangling from your fingers and... blisters are appearing within 5 minutes of starting to climb and stuff. And it was just, wow, I need to, like, lose a couple of pounds maybe again.
If you lost a couple of pounds, there'd be nothing left of you.
Well, I lost six kilos or something when I stopped drinking.
Wow.
I didn't stop eating. There was no reduction in diet whatsoever. It was the only thing that I'd cut out was beer. And... over the course of a year-ish, well, less than that, over the course of about 9 months, I lost 6 kilos with no other lifestyle change whatsoever.
Interesting.
But unfortunately, I've put that back on, which I think I've now started compensating.
It's all those trips to Greg's, isn't it, or Costa?
Well, it's that kind of... you lull yourself into a false sense of security that, oh, well, if I've lost 6 kilos, I can eat any old junk. And then you discover you can't really.
Yeah, yeah. And also what we do, because of what we do for a living, although what we do is fairly physical, it doesn't actually make you particularly fit. There's lots of arms and leg type stuff when you're oiking, you know, big lumps of MDF around or whatever else, and indeed carrying all that stuff up many flights of stairs. But it's not really, whilst none of that hurts exactly, it's not particularly good for you in terms of getting you fit. You need sort of extended cardio exercise to do that, and that's something I'm very bad at doing.
Yeah, same here.
I should be doing more of.
It's more of a kind of muscle building thing when you're lifting the big sheets and the massive units and all that, and you feel it the next day. But as you say, it's not really cardio.
The one after that.
Yeah. Well, I was crippled for about 3 days after climbing, so
yeah.
it does keep you healthier than a lot of other jobs, I tell you that much. And that's definitely noticeable after cutting down on customer work. I think I'm now feeling the need. I think it's one of the reasons why I'm desperate to get started on a renovation project. It's just like, yeah. I feel the need to do some physical stuff.
Yeah, sure. How's the house search going? I saw you put a video up for your Patreon about looking for property search. I mean, it's always a difficult thing to do anyway, and we're nudging up towards that period where nobody moves over Christmas and all that sort of stuff. So are you getting anywhere with it, or... Would you rather just sit with your head in your hands and cry for 10 minutes?
Yeah, at the minute, we're just getting nowhere, and I'm getting increasingly frustrated about it, because I've found a couple of properties that I'm interested in, and they would tick the boxes for exactly the sort of projects that I'm looking for.
Right.
And but it's very interesting. It's not just our house that isn't selling. You know, we're going on to Rightmove and stuff, and all the same houses that we were looking at 3 months ago are still there. A lot of them have dropped in price, not by a huge amount, but I mean, we've dropped ours in price twice now, and yeah, it's still just no one's coming through the door. You know, we've had a handful of viewings, and I think definitely until we get past the 31st and the whole Brexit yes. thing, which will this be out by then? I don't think it will be, but
I think so. That
at the minute is, I think, holding people back, and then it's a bad time of year anyway. So at the moment, we're, you know, kind of considering our options, because what I don't want to do is keep dropping the price and dropping the price. We've already dropped the price quite a lot, and if we drop it to a certain point, we might as well just stay here, because
yeah, sure.
One of the whole points of moving was to free up some cash and reduce capital outgoings, yeah, so that we can do this renovation. And if we drop yeah. too much, I mean, fair enough, if wherever we're buying drops as well, then that's yeah. less of a problem.
That never happens though, does it? You know, your own property drops spectacularly, and yet the one you want to buy only goes down by a couple of percent almost.
Yeah. And but again, we're not even in a position to put offers in until we've at least had an offer on ours. There's no real point in us putting in. So it's difficult to even gauge where the market is, because what I don't want to do is put a cheeky offer in on a place, maybe 30 grand less than the asking price or whatever.
Yeah.
And then they accept it. And then it's like, well, what are you going to do now? Because we can't do anything until we've sold ours. So it just seems to be no point in even going down the route of putting the offers in until we've at least had a bit of interest in our place. But we'll see. Worst case, we might take it off the market over Christmas and put it back on in spring. But it's very frustrating. I've never... We've moved house a lot over the years. Yeah. Like we've always joked that we've never stayed in a property longer than 4 years is our record, but we've been in this one for well over 6 years now, which we've never lived in a property this long before, and it's been great. And it's, as you know, it's a new build.
Yep.
It ticked all the boxes for when the family was young and we didn't have to do any maintenance to the property and things, and it worked really, really well for that. But it's the first time we've ever tried to sell a property and we've not been able to sell it. Almost pretty much every other property we've sold has sold within a matter of weeks of putting it on the market. Yeah. You know, I don't think we've ever had a house on the market for longer than a month. It's always sold pretty much straight away, because there've always been big renovation projects
yeah.
where we've got the house looking perfect and it's been a massive transformation and it's at the prime time to sell it, and they've always sold really well. And this is really our first experience of putting a house on the market where it's just sat there for 3 months doing nothing.
And how is that going to affect your grand master plan of being a YouTube influencer, full-time content creator, all that sort of thing? Does that have a knock-on effect? Do you think you're going to have to go back and start doing some client work? Or do you think you'll be able to keep things ticking along with what YouTube brings in? And
I think we can keep things ticking along.
Okay.
We're just going to tighten the belt elsewhere. We've got a few ideas of
get the kids down the coal mines again, and you know,
yeah, you know, get them off to work. They're old enough now.
Yeah, absolutely.
They should think themselves lucky. You know, up the chores, reduce the pocket money.
When we were their age, goodness, we were out sweeping the streets before we had to get up.
Yeah. Get up, lick the road clean. Well, we're just going to kind of see how it goes. It's not a problem from a filming perspective because there's loads of little jobs that need doing in this house.
Yeah.
It's just I've kind of, I think I'm,
in every house, I think this.
Well, yeah, but since we were moving, there's a lot of the little jobs where it's like, is there any point in doing that? Because, like, if they're going to be redecorating this room anyway,
yeah,
there's probably, they would sort that out as part of that. It's not going to affect the house price. You know, little cracks in cork and little bits of re-siliconing that need done and loads of jobs like that where we've kind of held off sorting it out, but I've got an endless supply of stuff that'll keep us busy, you know. So,
oh sure,
it's not too much of a problem from a filming perspective, and yeah, I think it'll be fine. It's just it's frustrating because we really yes. feel in limbo at the minute. It's
yeah, because the plan you had, you know, isn't quite working out because, you know, reasons completely out of your control. It's just, as you say, frustration is the word, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. And we'll see where things go. But it's kind of a little bit comforting to know that it's not just us and it's not this house. I mean, it's in a good location and it's like it's a lovely family home. And I always had it in my mind that it would just sell straight away, and it's just, it ain't. But I think the problem is that the people who are coming to view it haven't sold their houses, so the whole, everything down the line is stagnant.
Yeah, you get the inevitable chain where, you know, and at the end of the chain you get a first-time buyer, and if they can't do it or raise the money, then the whole process kind of grinds to a halt. We feel for you. I've only ever moved house once, and we bought this place and stayed here.
Yeah.
We thought about moving last year, and again we couldn't really find what we wanted, and we decided then that the sort of places that we were looking at we weren't quite ready for, so we're just enjoying the place we've got, and we'll just kind of live with it really.
How long have you been there then?
26, wow. 27 years.
Wow. So your kids grew up there?
Paid our mortgage off last year, year before. Yeah, wow. Kids have grown up here.
So proper central London kids then?
Yes, yeah, yeah. It's
I
hadn't thought about that actually. Yeah, I suppose they are, aren't they? Yeah. So yeah, anyway, we've been here a while and we've no particular plans to move. We're at that stage where everything is starting to need doing again. My wife retired earlier in the year and she's set her sights on redecorating one room a month.
Oh, wow.
So without my help, I hasten to add, other than moving a bit of furniture around and, you know, perhaps doing a little bit of cutting in on the edges and reaching the tall parts and putting the dust sheets down and all that sort of stuff. But otherwise, it's a totally solo effort and we rattled through our bedroom this week. And it's looking really good, actually. So, yeah, we're going to work our way around the house slowly but surely. But as always, you know, as with workshops, as with homes, you acquire a certain amount of sort of cruft that really needs to be cleared out once in a while. And just clearing the rooms is, you know, we're generally, well, my wife is generally a very tidy person anyway. But we acquire a lot of stuff along the way and just getting to the bottom of that and clearing it all out is the thing that really takes the time. So, yeah, you know, it's an ongoing job for the rest of this year and the rest of next year. We've also got some travelling planned as well. So, interesting times.
A room a month, that's a lot. That's ambitious.
It is. You know, the rooms aren't that big. Things like our bedroom, for example, we've got one wall is all mirrored wardrobe doors, so now suddenly we're down to three walls. One of those has got two big windows in it, so there's not that much wall there. So there's, you know, the other side of the wall opposite has a door in it, so, you know, there's less wall there, if you like. So there's only one big full wall, which is a painted colour wall, if feature wall, whatever you call them, and the rest of it's just plain white. So the only fiddly bit really is the real time consuming it was getting around to, because it's all original plasterwork, plaster coving around the ceilings.
Right.
And the only fiddle is doing that. For some reason, my good wife didn't want me to get the sprayer out to be spraying that. I could have gone around there in about 5 minutes flat.
I was going to say, would that not be the perfect?
She wasn't happy about
the perfect thing.
it would have been perfect for it, but she didn't want the. We're sleeping in there, so we didn't want the air to be tainted by overspray, or indeed, you know, there's an awful lot of stuff that we'd have to cover up. I would have been happy to do it, but she didn't want me to, so fair enough.
Happy to brush it.
Happy wife, happy life. Yeah, I wasn't, you know, as I said, she's doing the painting, not me, so I was just there as a bit of extra muscle, extra help.
It's a labour of love doing that sort of stuff with a brush. It takes so long.
It is indeed, and if anybody would like their rooms decorated for a room a month, she's available for hire.
And especially because when you're painting that sort of stuff, I don't know what yours looks like, but often it'll have dust in it, like sitting in all the little bits of the plaster that you just can't get to, but the paintbrush will get to it while you're trying to paint it, you know. But
yeah, well, again, I've done enough painting before. I hoover, vacuum all the walls before we start, so it's all pretty yeah. clean and clear.
Get like the brush nozzle right inside exactly. all the little intricate bits yeah. and try and clear it out. Yeah. And yeah. I mean, we set a target of doing 3 rooms per year at the minute, and we've managed to get 3 done this year. I still haven't done my office studio room,
yeah.
and but now there's rooms that we started off doing when the house workers, we decorated the kitchen as soon as we moved in.
Yeah,
that was like the only room. Every other room just was white walls for years. But the one room that we did decorate, because we thought, you know, kitchen grime and all that, we'll get some yeah. decent paint on the walls, was the kitchen. But that needs redone now, and that's only 6 years ago, and that's looks tatty now.
I'm sure there are people slapping their foreheads saying, only 6 years? You should be decorating your whole house every year. Yeah, no, I we were saying, we don't know how, you know, obviously it's different for us because our kids are, you know, grown and gone, grown and flown, whereas with you, with kids in the house, we were saying, while we were messing about with this painting this week, we don't know how we did it when the kids were smaller. But we did, you know, we somehow managed to do some painting when they were little, and yeah, it's a real chore. It's not my favourite thing at all. I've done plenty of painting for other people, and I didn't like it then either, but at least I was getting paid for it.
Well, at least if it's for yourself, at least if it's for your own house. I mean, doing hallways is always a killer for me. I hate doing hallways.
Oh, hall stairs and landings.
It's awful.
There's a lot of area in that. It is such a big space.
It's one of those jobs that looks like it should take 5 minutes, but actually it takes a couple of weeks. You know, by the time you've just the gloss work alone and all the skirtings and banisters and all, you know, all your spindles and all that.
Well, we made the fortunately more by luck than judgment good decision to strip all the woodwork in the house, so there's no glossing to do.
That's a sensible move. Honestly, it's a sensible move, especially in the hall with if you've got stripped
spindles
and all that sort of thing.
They took a long time to strip, but
yeah, but then you never have to worry about it.
That was a labour of love.
Maybe once every 10 years, a new quick coat of varnish or something.
A quick wipe over with some wax.
Yeah, that's the way to go.
Anyway, that's enough about us. Let's talk some more about us. big news on the podcast. As I alluded to very briefly in the opener, we're doing a weekly show now. This is when we first started, we set an initial target of 200 supporters on Patreon. And round about then, we thought we'd try and do a weekly show if we managed to get a couple of hundred Patreon supporters. And we actually gained our 201st Patreon supporter whilst we were recording the last show, which was pretty special. We had lots of requests for weekly shows, but we've been thinking about how we finance the shows and sponsorship and all that sort of stuff. And what we decided to do is to try and keep this a sponsor-free zone as much as possible. You know, we'll never say never, but we'd rather just have us talking without having to put in slightly awkward ad breaks and all that sort of stuff. And what we've come up with, and I did sort of spring this idea a little bit on Andy whilst we were recording the last show, and we put it out there for our existing Patreon supporters, and it's been overwhelmingly a positive response to it. What we've decided to do is record two shows. So instead of doing an after show, we'll record two roughly hour-long shows, and we'll put the second show out just for our Patreon supporters on our Patreon channel. And that'll be out on the offbeat, as it were. So if you're not a Patreon supporter, nothing will change. But if you are, you'll get a full hour-long show every other week kind of thing. So we'll get the public show coming out whichever Monday, and then we'll have the Patreon show coming out the week following.
Yeah, and it just kind of it keeps things really fair for people who are supporting us on Patreon. It basically means that if you support us on Patreon, we're weekly. If you don't want to do the Patreon thing, and it's only, you know, $1 a month, and but if you don't want to do the Patreon thing, then you just things are as normal, and it's a two weekly show. But if you want to hear the weekly show, then simply just subscribe on Patreon, and you can subscribe to the extra show that we've got on that, and it basically means that, well, it just, you know, rewards all of our amazing Patreon supporters that we've got out there. It makes it a little bit more sustainable for us, and it just means we don't have to worry about sponsorship, because we've had quite a lot of sponsors interested in sponsoring the show, and it just turns it into a bit of a different animal. And we were getting like a lot of strange requests for sponsorship where it would just really destroy the feel of the show, I think, where we would end up with so many sponsor reads and it wouldn't bring in that much money anyway, yeah. You know?
Yes, I mean, that's a critical thing. For a show of this size, it's a little bit niche. We really enjoyed doing it, and I think, to be perfectly honest, if we weren't doing the podcast, we'd probably set up a weekly or a fortnightly phone call anyway, just to have a chat. But for a podcast of this sort of size and the sort of reach it has, and it has grown spectacularly over the last couple of seasons, and it looks like this season's going pretty well as well. But in reality, the numbers in sponsorship terms are pretty modest, and it really wouldn't bring in that much money per show, and it would come with an awful lot of strings attached, and it would break up the feel of the, you know, two blokes chatting, which people do seem to enjoy and do seem to appreciate.
Yeah, so it's kind of a never say never thing, but if we can make this work on Patreon only, then it's a far, you know, preferred route to go down. It keeps things really simple. It means that the show is much more listenable. And like at the end of the day, each episode, even though that you're only hearing like a 1 or 1.5 hour episode, it takes about 15 man hours to put a single episode together. And it's got to be a practical endeavor. As much as we enjoy doing it, we've got to have some way of paying for the costs of, you know, the hosting and the podcast hosting side of things, and our own time for making it and all that sort of thing. And this just kind of, this hopefully will work quite well. So if you do want to join us on the weekly show, please just go on to patreon.com/measuringuppodcast. It's open to everyone from $1 and above. So you just have to do the minimum thing on Patreon, and you'll have access to the weekly show then. So it'd be fantastic.
Yeah. Although, you know, we are open to higher donations, higher contributions than $1. But yes, it costs as little as $1 a month will get you access to the Patreon shows. So thank you very much to all of our wonderful Patreon supporters who do just that. We did get a great, posed the question to our Patreon supporters on the after show in the last show, and we got overwhelmingly positive feedback from it. And we've got a great little exchange here in the comments section there, one from Scott and a reply from Graham. Scott said, "I think it's a great idea. I'd love the Patreon show to have more content like the regular one. I think too many of the after shows give too much airtime to the moronic troll comments," which is a very fair point, and we are aware of that, Scott.
Yeah.
Scott says, "I'd happily listen to you guys read a phone directory, starting with A, okay? but would love the shows to feature more of your opinions on the stuff that matters rather than some idiot's rant about how bad your work is. Thank you for that, Scott. And Graham replied to him, totally agree with this, but I also feel it's good for Andy and Peter to have a space to vent safely. A safe space, yes. Also, if I'm having a bad day, Graham continues, at least I can comfort myself that I'm not yet at the stage of leaving nasty comments on YouTube videos, so it's quite cheering. Again, that's the perfect sort of type of comment that we would love all of our YouTube comments to be like, you know, sensible, rational, considered, polite exchange of opinions. And you're absolutely right, Scott. We do go on a bit too much about the YouTube comments sometimes. But it is good to talk about this. It is good to vent a little
sometimes
bit.
Sometimes you just need to vent. And it's very interesting. I was watching... do you follow the H3H3 podcast at all? Or the H3H3... Ethan Klein on there, a great channel. And he was doing an interview with Casey Neistat on the H3H3 podcast a couple of weeks ago. And they were talking about... neither of them have released videos for a long time. These were both YouTubers who... They've become very big on the platform, if you're not aware. American YouTubers... So in the UK, you might not be aware of who they are, but we'll include links in the show notes and you can look them up. And they've really curbed their content production recently. And, you know, they are the pioneers in all of this. They are the people who are now experiencing what life is like to run a big YouTube channel. And it was very interesting when they were talking about things like, you know, if this doesn't work out, what do you do when you become that famous that everyone knows who you are, but you're not making, and he was talking about this interesting transition point where you're not making enough money to do it full time, but you're too famous to do anything else because everyone knows who you are, but you can't just kind of, you still need to have a day job. And it was very interesting when he was saying like, well, if this doesn't work out, I can't go and pack bags in my local shop because I would be inundated with fans wanting autographs all the time. You know, you can't
get selfies with you all the time.
You can't go back to a normal job after you've become. And I'm not saying that's happening for us. We're much more niche, and you know, maybe in the maker community, people know who we are, but not outside that really. But for these massive channels who have millions and millions of subscribers, if YouTube goes belly up or that business model goes belly up, what do you then do when you have that level of fame but no financial income anymore? And
that's a great thought, actually. It had never occurred to me that YouTube could actually go out of business, or that Google would pull the plug on it.
Or you just have a channel that just instantly gets demonetized, like some of these kids' channels where suddenly all of the content just isn't ripe for monetization anymore. And then what do you do when you've written, they drew an interesting parallel to, you know, film stars and things like that. But film stars, so if you think about anyone else who had that level of fame in the past, over the last 100 years, it would be film stars who would always have kind of an ongoing career they were effectively employees for the film production studios and that sort of thing.
Yeah.
So although they were famous, it wasn't their business. Whereas YouTube, you're famous and you're running the show. So if things don't work out, what do you do? You can't just say, I'm a famous YouTuber, can I have a job, please, of being a famous YouTuber on your channel? You know, it doesn't work like that. If that thing disappears, you're screwed, really. And it's this whole notion of, it's a very, very young industry and no one really understands where it's going. We're only just starting to see the effect that it's starting to have on people's lives. And, you know, we're talking about...
I was going
to
say, because it's so young as well, we have had instances, tragically, of people committing suicide because their channels or because of comments, the effect of social media on them personally. And if you are young, I think this is the benefit of coming into this at a slightly older age, or much older in my case, we're better able to cope with the sort of nonsense that that you do get when you stick your head over the parapet.
And I think a lot of it's...
Somebody will always be there to take a pop at you.
I think a lot of it's coming down to the whole running YouTube as a business thing.
Yes.
Versus there's a lot of people on YouTube who have literally put together a couple of viral videos and suddenly they've got a big channel off the back of it.
I'm so sorry. You couldn't make this up. Right, I've just got an email. When do you think they're collecting the tray?
Well, no way. Are they coming now?
I've just got an email from the design associate. They're collecting it at 10 a.m.
10 a.m.
10 a.m. Absolute classic.
Brilliant.
Okay, I've got it. I'll be there. Sorry about that. Sorry, didn't mean to interrupt.
Don't worry.
Yeah, so, yes, running YouTube as a business. Go on.
Yeah, sorry. So there's a lot of people who have managed to get very successful channels almost by accident, where maybe they've had a couple of viral videos and then they've decided to build their channel out of these viral videos. And suddenly, you know, it turns into a bigger and bigger thing and they're making lots of money. Mm. But it was never designed to be a business in the first place. You know, it was always like... And then they suddenly realise if they want to keep that level of income coming in, they need to have, you know, a more sustainable plan, and then they do need to start treating it a bit as a business. And when you're very young, when you haven't had any life experience, you maybe haven't even worked a proper job, because some of these people are doing it from a very early age, and
yes,
and they're getting this experience of like extreme fame and extreme wealth, but with none of the background life experience to go to kind of arm you to handle all of that.
Yeah.
And I think that would be a very difficult thing to deal with. And and a lot of people think about, you know, the fame and wealth side of things, which really isn't, you know, okay, fair enough. If you're into your millions and millions of subscribers, then you stand a better chance of making money off the platform. But even if these young YouTubers make a couple of million quid, that's not enough to get them by for the rest of their lives. You know, that's not going to last very long if they decide to just pull the plug and retire at an early age. You know, they've got to keep something going, and they need, as we say, they can't go and work in a shop because they're too famous.
Because they'll get inundated by people wanting selfies and autographs and all the rest of it. Selfies, probably. I don't think anybody collects autographs anymore.
It was interesting what Ethan was saying on the H3H3 thing, where, I mean, they've stopped doing public events altogether because it was getting too scary and they were having to have armed guards.
Oh,
like four or five armed guards with it, because they've done some quite controversial stuff over the years. Okay. All thought-provoking, but, you know, it pushes the trolls to a new level, and I guess... You have to cater for that. If you're going to push the envelope of what you can say on the platform, there's very little that they've ever put out that I strongly disagree with. I can't think of anything that I strongly disagree with, to be honest. But you can see why it would maybe get the trolls riled. And in that kind of situation, you do have to consider, well, what if someone just comes at you in the middle of a signing or something like that. And they, as I say, they've had to have four or five armed guards with them whenever they're doing public events. And it's like, oh my God. Anyway, that's enough YouTube talk for now. But how did we even get onto that?
We could just do a little, you know, Instagram clip just saying, one of us saying, how did we get onto that? How did we get onto that? How did we get onto that?
Totally off on a tangent there. And I was sure there was something else I was going to say about it, but it's fallen out my brain.
Yeah. A little bit of follow-up. Jason wrote to us and said, hi, Peter and Andy. As a Patreon supporter, it's great to have you back. Thanks, Jason. This podcast and your YouTube channels are a great inspiration to me and provide invaluable insight to both delivering and running a business. And we are in times of cha-cha changes. I wanted to share his own changes. 6 weeks ago, he says, the stars aligned to allow me to make the big decision to leave the telecoms industry. He's always promised himself before his 50th birthday that his working days would be spent doing something he really enjoys, and he left his job 2 weeks ago and has now started college working towards a level one diploma in carpentry and joinery. Wow, fantastic.
Awesome.
He says he's hoping that this will be the first step in running his own business, designing and building high-quality bespoke solutions for the house, office and garden. What a great story. Thanks for that, Jason. We wish you all the very best of luck with that. Jason goes on to give us his, what is it, his Instagram. That is very, very smartly chosen a username which applies to Instagram, Twitter, and all the usual platforms. So maybe we'll pop that in the show notes so everybody can give him a follow and see the sort of work that he does.
Fantastic stuff. Well done, Jason. That's absolutely brilliant if you can keep us updated with how things go as well. And
yeah, that'd be great.
It's always interesting when we hear about people just starting to break into the woodworking industry and then hear success stories later down the line, and it'd be lovely if you can keep us up to date with all of that. Fantastic work.
Yeah, we'd really appreciate that.
We got a comment from Andy as well, just about comments and reviews, and he just said, trying not to be negative, so please don't block me. Just thought I would give some feedback.
And block.
Just thought I would give some feedback as a non-creator. Some of us leave comments that can be seen as negative because we see that we, the user, partially owns the channel in that we spend our time in viewing it and therefore investing our time. This, of course, does not excuse bad manners or telling you how you should do a thing. The after show does sort of hint at the fact that you don't want any negative comments and you just want thanks, etc. Just to be 100% clear, I don't think I've ever deleted a comment just because it's negative. The only time I delete comments is when they are, you know, insulting and just nasty comments. And certainly in terms of blocking people and things like that, I would only block someone who is, you know, genuinely a troll. And so just to put that out there, you're not going to get blocked or your comment deleted just because it's a negative comment. Definitely not. But one of the important things is where he said that he views it as kind of that they partially own the channel. I would, no, it's definitely, you don't partially own the channel, but we do obviously appreciate the views. I would view it more as a shop and a shop window. That's the way that I view it.
Okay. I tend to think of it as a, you know, passengers on the bus, but I'm driving. I'm taking this where it's going to go, open to suggestions. Maybe we'll have a little detour along the way as a result of some suggestions, but this is my channel and I'm in charge. Yeah, I agree about the ownership thing. And just to come back to the comments again very quickly, we do say, and I know we do this because we make a point in doing this, we do say every single time when we talk about YouTube comments that 99% of the comments are fantastic and supportive and thought-provoking and interesting. There's 1% that are critical or difficult or just making bad comments for the sake of making bad comments. And it's the 1% of those 1% that we talk about, that we bring, that we vent about a little bit, that we have done in the after show and maybe occasionally poke a little bit of fun at. Absolutely, you're not going to get blocked just because you're making critical comments. Why would we do that? We're not, you know, if we were in constant search of praise, then we'd be doing something else, yeah. That's for sure.
If anything, it's the critical comments that I read more because you learn more from them. Mm. You know, we've learned so much from comments over the years, so please don't just... I'd rather see constructive comments saying, have you thought about this or why didn't... Yeah. But, you know, I always say, word it the way you would speak to someone face-to-face, you know, rather than saying, you're wrong, you should have done this, say, why didn't you do this? Because there might be a reason why the person didn't do it that way. And I think that's kind of one of the... But as I say, I view it as a shop window. It's my shop, and the shop wouldn't exist if it wasn't for customers or viewers coming to look at the stuff.
Yeah. Good point.
So I view it as my shop, and I kind of view the comments as me letting people put post-it notes in the window of little suggestions. And it's my window, and I'll let you put post-it notes in my window. But if you start putting things in my window that insult me or insult my shop or insult my family or are just plain rude to other people or are full of swearing and things that I don't want on my channel, then I'll just take that post-it note away. It doesn't mean I've got anything against you personally. It's just I don't want that in my shop window. And that absolutely, the channel wouldn't exist if it wasn't for people watching the channel. But I'm in control of that space. I've built that space up. It's my shop window. And if you want to have a shop window, yeah, you can set up a channel and have your own shop window. And that's kind of how I view things. Yeah.
It's a good analogy, good comparison.
Basically, don't panic. Yeah. As Peter says, it's a tiny, tiny, tiny proportion. But I think it's a fun thing to vent about on the after show. But I think it's important to mention as well, on the weekly show, we're not going to be doing that. A weekly show will now be just normal episodes. Yeah. When it's not going to be like the Patreon one will just be us talking about YouTube, even though today isn't a Patreon one and all we've done is talk about YouTube. can we talk about briefly, because we've not got that long left, strangest handyman jobs from back in the day? Can you remember of any of yours? Because how long were you doing?
Not specifically, to be honest. I don't think I had any. I know this had popped up on the in the potential topics list, so you obviously have had some. I haven't really had any weird handyman requests. I did have one slightly strange set of circumstances where I'd done a lot of work for a guy who was gay, and he recommended me to somebody who was a female colleague of his. And I don't know if she assumed that I was also gay, but she would wander around the apartment, the flat, in her underwear.
Okay.
without batting an eyelid. And I presume I was supposed to just sort of carry on working, which is what I did. But it was a very strange episode. And this happened regularly enough that I just had to assume that she'd assumed, because I'd been recommended by this guy, that she also thought I wasn't interested in the female form in any way. Certainly wasn't interested in hers, let's put it that way. But no, in terms of strangest jobs, no, I haven't had any. Go on, tell me yours.
Well, I was going to say there was always a whole selection of your common bread and butter type jobs. You know, there would be a lot of things. It'd be interesting to hear about the sort of stuff that you did as well. Like what before it evolved into woodworking predominantly and all that side of things. But there was always a lot of things like replacing bulbs. You wouldn't believe how many times.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah.
I got called out.
Oh, people don't like ladders. Linda, my wife, isn't very happy on a ladder. People just don't like going. Probably people don't have ladders because they're in flats or apartments or whatever.
And a lot of people just couldn't work out how you get. And sometimes it would be a challenge for me. There was somewhere you just couldn't work out how to get into it to get the bulb out.
Yeah.
You know, and especially things like some of your shower downlight type ones, where over time, and often it's like a screw fitting, and often over time it'll
and then the whole fitting comes away in your hand as well. Not that we would consider doing things like electrical work in a bathroom, which is a controlled space. I think you're allowed to change lamps.
I think you can change light bulbs. But there was a lot of light bulb changing and all that sort of thing. There was a lot of re-silicon work I used to do, and I was the local re-silicon guy, and for some reason I would have said 50% of my jobs at one time was just doing re-silicon.
Really?
Re-silicon work.
Wow.
It was to the point that I was almost debating setting up a separate business just to do that, because it was quite a profitable thing to do. No one was doing it well. Plumbers hated doing re-siliconing work because it's a chew on getting all the old silicon out and all that. Anyway. And
a single res reg scraper I always found to be really good.
Oh, I had a whole
to get it off tile.
Kit. I had a whole kit of stuff for doing it and getting the joint completely as if it was a brand new clean joint before redoing it all.
So as a professional siliconer, mm-hmm. did you fill the bathtub full of water?
Yeah,
before you,
well,
silicon,
it would depend on if it's a bathtub that's been there for 50 years and you can tell there's just no movement in it. You could tell there were certain ones where it's like, you can fill it with water if you want, but you know it's not going anywhere. But
I never bothered with steel bathtubs, but all the plastic ones, the fiberglass ones, always would, because they always move a little bit.
Definitely on the plastic ones, but on some of your big old cast iron ones, you know, they're not going anywhere. And
no.
You could tell when you're working on it if there's movement. And on the plastic ones, you would always fill the bathtub before doing your final silicon and leave it.
I was going to say, first bathroom refit that I did, I had to take a. It was one of those ones where the bathtub had been put in, and then the bath room built around it, basically. So there was no way it would come out in one piece, and it was an old cast iron bath, and I had to smash it.
Oh,
and I didn't have ear defenders with me, and my ears rang for days afterwards. Oh, that was a big old heavy lump to get out.
They look like they would be much easier to break than they actually are.
It's an old one as well, obviously, and it's really, really thick casting on it.
Yeah.
Shame, but, you know, there you go. It's got to come
what
out.
What colour was it?
The man once knew. It was white, oddly enough, yeah.
Oh, white. I had in a renovation property from a while ago, and it was a kind of turquoise,
nice
blue bathroom suite that was in there, and again it had to be just smashed up to get it out. There was no, and even once it was smashed up, the individual pieces were unbelievably heavy, and really, really sharp shards of the cast iron or whatever it was made of. And
but it was like it was in a tiny little room, and it was like a bell ringing. It really was. It's like, have you ever been up at the top of Big Ben or the, you know, Campanile in Venice or whatever, with any kind of bell tower, and the bells are going at midday? It was like that. Yeah. It's just like, oh,
it's unbelievable.
And you can't put both hands over your ears and smash the bath up.
That's a fun job.
Absolutely.
I used to do a lot of shower screen repairs as well. That was a really common one of, you know, where the wheels have fallen off shower screens, and you'd have to try and track down the wheels of a manufacturer from 10 years ago.
Hated that.
And then obviously loads of flat pack jobs and things like that. That was never ending.
Yeah. When you first started doing handyman stuff, what was your first job? Do you remember? First job that you did for money?
I should remember that. There was one where I was asked to put in like a shower thing, but I didn't take it on because it was more of a plumber job. What was the first one? I think it was just like changing a bulb or something. I don't think it was anything particularly exciting. You know, it was probably like changing out a pendant light or something, you know. What about you?
Mine, well, it's one that I wouldn't have been able to do now. It was legal for me to do it then, but it was to swap out a very nasty old electric shower unit for a new one. So, you know, water and electrics, who doesn't love that? but it worked, and it was all fine, and as far as I know, the client didn't die from electrocution. No, I mean it's not a difficult thing to do, but it is strictly controlled now, and I wouldn't be able to do that these days. But that was my first ever job. Quoted half a day, and you went for it.
I had a landlord that I used to do all of the property maintenance on this particular property that they had, and I just had the key for the property, and they literally said, you know, they'll tell the tenants when I'm coming over, and they'll just make sure they're not even in. And it was quite a nice property to work on, because I literally never even got to meet the tenants ever in the whole time I was there. That's a whole story for another episode, actually, because, but on that one, there was always a whole range of different jobs that I would have to do. And on one of the jobs, she asked me to change out the shower, and not an electric shower, just a normal shower.
Yeah.
But it had been leaking for years and years, and all the tiles were falling off the wall, and it was just a nightmare. And they wanted me to do it because I was their property maintenance guy. You know, that was And I was like, you should really get a plumber to do this. You know, this is a big job. And they were like, well, you know, it needs all the tiling done and all that as well. And then I'd have to get a tiler. And can you not just do it? And I was like, And I took it on. And it ended up being like porcelain tiles and having to drill the porcelain tiles for the pipework and stuff. And it was just awful. And I vowed from that moment onwards never to touch those sort of jobs again. It was
porcelain tiles. Man, I've blunted so many diamond drill bits on porcelain tiles. Yeah. It's a nightmare. Never
pure
again.
Pure evil.
Never again.
Absolute evil. I mean, it's the sort of thing I would do for myself. And it's not even the sort of thing that I would advertise that I would do, but they just wanted us to help out because I could do the whole job.
Yeah, sure.
But then I would have jobs like I had someone who their kitchen worktop had caught fire. If you imagine where a cooker hob sits,
they were barbecuing, weren't they? Let's be honest.
I don't know what they'd done, but basically, if you imagine where a hob goes, and you've got like your four-ring burner, typical hob, and you've got the little strip at the front and the little strip at the back. Well, somehow they'd set fire to the little strip at the back, and literally the back of the worktop just didn't exist anymore. It was just like a crumbly mess of burnt, like, worktop.
Wow.
And they were like, oh, can you fix this? And it's like, well, needs a new worktop, really, you know. And I ended up, they were like, oh, well, we can't afford to do they were tenants, actually, and they destroyed it. And they were like, oh, well, we're moving out and we need to do something to try and fix it. And they'd come to some agreement with the landlord that I ended up making a little aluminium filler strip and put it over the top of the burnt section just so that it wasn't just a void at the back. And obviously it needed to be something heat proof and all that sort of thing. So I just made this little aluminium strip. And it looked quite good. It looked like kind of part of the cooker once it was done.
Yeah.
But that was an interesting one. I had one where all the paint fell off someone's ceiling in the bathroom, literally in sheets. I'll put some pictures of these on my Instagram if I get a chance.
These are amazing.
That was a one where if you ever want a lesson on why you should prime plaster before painting it, that was a perfect one. You could peel off the entire ceiling in a big sheet. That was a fun one. I had someone pay me to untangle a cord on their Venetian blinds.
No way.
So literally it was part, I mean, they had a whole list of jobs I had to go through, but that was one of the jobs that they were prepared to pay me to do because they didn't want to untangle the cord themselves. And then I had a one where I had to build someone's lawnmower for them. So they had bought a brand new lawnmower, came in a box and everything. They were happy to obviously cut their own grass and stuff, but they just couldn't fathom out how to take it out of the box and put it together. So they paid me to do that. And then probably the strangest one, someone bought a vacuum cleaner, again, brand new, came in a box, all kind of packaged up and everything, and they literally paid me to take it out of the box and put it together.
People think building a flat pack is a ridiculous thing to be paid to do. That's extraordinary. Was it difficult?
No, it literally just clicked together. It didn't even involve a screwdriver. I mean, it was just...
what do you charge them for that? Do you know, an hour or half an hour?
It was just like 20 quid or something. You know, it was... it's one of those things that you have to be quite strict that you don't just allow people, while you're here, can you just do this? While you're here, because you go down a slippery slope of being the guy who, whenever you're at that customer's site, they will always add on extra jobs.
Yeah.
So, it kind of depends on the customer. You know, if it's a really good customer, it's like, I'll just do it for you. You know, and I had plenty of customers who they were regulars and they would always be giving us really good jobs and anything like that. It would just be, I'll just sort it while I'm here.
Yeah.
But then sometimes if you knew it was going to end up going down that slippery slope, you'd have to say, I will have to charge because I do need to, you know, I've got another job I need to get to.
Yeah.
And it'll just be like a tenner or 20 quid or whatever to sort that out. And you just have to make a very quick judgment call when they chuck that out. It's like, well, what do I charge for putting together a vacuum cleaner? I'd never considered that as part of my business model. But yeah, literally take it out of the box, go through the instructions and make sure the cord's running through all the little channels where the cord has to run and all that sort of thing. But I think they just genuinely, they couldn't be bothered. They didn't want to read the instructions. It was too much hassle. They just wanted a functional vacuum cleaner. They didn't want the job of having to put it together. And it was just like, well, while you're here, I'd rather pay you to do it. And it was like, fair enough if that's what you want.
Wild.
Very odd. And I'm sure there were other weird ones which will spring to mind, but that was a small selection. So if people ever think that there isn't a market for doing handyman work and that sort of thing, you would not believe.
No job too small.
The kind of work that people are happy to pay someone to do, you know, because people live very busy lives these days. And sometimes when they get back from work and they've had a heavy day, the last thing they want to be doing is changing light bulbs and putting vacuum cleaners together.
Yeah. They want to crack a bottle, sit back and watch telly or whatever else. So, yeah, fair enough. I always used to market myself as, you know, being like DIY, but I do it for you kind of thing.
Yeah.
So that was the sort of standard I was aiming for. Set a low bar, then nobody complained too much.
It's interesting how these things kind of evolve, and obviously both of ours evolved more into the woodworking side. But yeah, it could have so easily been a resiliconing business, you know, and that would have been it.
Yeah.
It would have been Gosforth Resilicon rather than Gosforth Handyman.
That could be a whole new, that could be another channel you could you could add to your...
Can't do any more channels.
To the 10 you've already got.
Yeah. I'm resurrecting my Andy Mac Drums channel at the minute, which that's another... Well, we'll save that for the next episode. On that note, let's say a quick shout out to 20 of our random $3 plus Patreons. Remember, if you want your name on this list, all you need to do is support us at $3 or above, and we pick 20 names out of a hat every episode, and you might have the chance of having your name read out on the show, and you'll get your name on the Hall of Fame on the Measuring Up podcast website as well. And today we would like to give a special thank you to Steve at Fenricka Woodstuff, Matt Roberts, Piece of Timber, Ben Harker, This'll Do, Phil Wilson, Paul at Cunningham's Custom Creations, Owen Bullock, Wayne Gilbert, and Rakesh Patel.
And I'd like to add my thanks to Sam Valiant, Mike Broom, Keith Turner, Dominic Gajinson, James Taylor, Jame, Paul Gardner, Gareth Hopkins, Ryan Hunt, and Randall Davis.
Thank you, everyone, once again for listening. And we will look forward to joining all of our Patreon supporters next week on our new weekly show. Remember, just go to patreon.com/measuringuppodcast and you can support us from a dollar and above there, and you'll have access to the new weekly show. Where can we find you, Peter?
You can find me at 10-Minute Workshop .tv. We'll take you straight to my YouTube channel at 10-Minute Workshop on Instagram, or at 10-Minute Shop on the Twitters. How about you, Andy?
You can find me, Gosforth Handyman, on YouTube, Gosforth Andy on Twitter, and Gosforth Handyman on Instagram as well.
If you'd like to get in touch with us, you can do that via the contact form on measuringuppodcast.com, or you can email the show at contact@measuringuppodcast.com. If you've got the time, please rate us or review us on iTunes. The iTunes reviews really do help push us further up the stack. We're trying to get as many 5-star reviews as we possibly can, and that really helps us achieve that. So thank you very much indeed. That's it though for this week. Look forward to seeing you in the next show, or next week as we call it, on Patreon.
See you later.